It's time to read the East Valley News. Thank you for joining me. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Today, we're going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe, including Arizona publishes rules for toilety-to-tap water. Council getting sneak preview of Phoenix's budget challenges. Light Up Ahwatukee promises the greatest show in the Took. And Kyrene students celebrate Native American heritage. Our first article from the Ahwatukee Foothills News. Arizona publishes rules for toilety-to-tap water by Howard Fisher. It's been discussed and debated for decades, but Arizona is finally at the point where cities, including Phoenix, and utilities will soon be able to get permits to deliver drinking water to faucets that just days earlier had been flushed down the toilet. The Arizona Department of Environmental Quality last week took the required legal steps to publish the draft rules for what it's calling advanced water purification. Randall Mattis, the agency's deputy director, said final approval could come by the end of the year, paving the way for water suppliers to construct the facilities. Phoenix already is spending hundreds of millions to convert a formerly shut-down water treatment facility in Cave Creek to deliver toilet-to-tap water. Mattis said the technology is good enough to actually produce water that is purer than the treated groundwater or surface water that is now being delivered. He said it even removes chemicals that are not prohibited by the Safe Water Drinking Act. But the question remains of whether Arizonans will accept it. Put simply, there's a bit of an ick factor that, regardless of what people may understand about the chemistry and the process, may still seem to some as toilet to tap. DEQ, and even the State Department of Water Resources, has worked for years to tamp down that phrase. Still, it has been a process. For some time, it was being promoted by the more sanitized name of direct potable reuse. Mattis said that rebranding it as advanced water purification was based at least in part on testing what is acceptable to consumers, but that, he said, is just a small part of the story. The main reason for the change is it just more accurately reflects what is purified water, Mattis explained. He said that works like reuse and recycling have meanings that don't provide an insight into what's happening. We felt that advanced water purification was a better description of what this is, that there's an advanced treatment stream that purifies this water and provides that safe and healthy drinking water, Mattis said. Yet, even with all that, there is not universal acceptance. ADEQ did two studies statewide to assess people's thoughts on advanced water purification, water security, and other issues, he said. The result, said Mattis, is 70% of those who answered the surveys were not opposed to the technology or were in favor of the technology. Still, when asked whether they would likely drink AWP water, the feelings were divided. A third said very likely, but 42% said somewhat likely, with 15% falling into the somewhat likely category and 10% saying they were unlikely to drink it at all. Among those who fall into the unlikely category, 38% said they were skeptical about safety. Mattis said he believes some of that can be addressed by showing how the standards that are being adopted can remove, in his words, 99.99999999% of contaminants. He said that includes things ranging from viruses and opiates to antibiotic-resistant bacteria. Troy Hayes, Water Services Director for the City of Phoenix, said it's a question of education and socialization. He said his city is revamping its Cave Creek treatment facility to meet the new standards. Once that happens, Hayes said, he envisions giving people tours to see what happens, show them it can treat water beyond what is now being delivered to homes from the Salt and Verde River systems, and taste the results. Scottsdale already is doing that, with a plant that is treating sewage to drinking water standards. And while that's not yet being put into the pipes going to people's homes, the city still needs a DEQ permit to do that. Scottsdale is showing off what can be produced by working with local breweries to produce beer. And there's something else, educating consumers to understand they already are drinking recycled water. There isn't new water on the planet, Hayes said, saying it's the same water that was around at the time of the dinosaurs. The difference is that sewage is being put into the ground and then being filtered, as it were, through layers of rock and soil, only to be pumped out at some future point. This just replaces that natural process with technology and filters. But even if people understand that intellectually, that doesn't overcome opposition. Nearly 1 in 5 of those who told DEQ they were unlikely to drink AWP water cited what the survey said was the yuck factor. There is another concern: cost of all this technology that eventually will have to be passed on to consumers, and none of this extra level of processing sewage is likely to come cheap. It will depend a lot on the specific utility, Mattis said. There is an economy of scale factor that is at play, he said. The more water you can get treated, the more efficient the process is. There's also the fact that DEQ is not telling utilities exactly what they need to build. Instead, the agency simply has detailed what has to come out at the other end to be used for drinking. We have written the rules in a way that it applies standards, Mattis said. It allows innovation in the actual treatment equipment utilized, he continued. And, as certain technologies become more popular, Mattis expects the cost to come down. Hayes said that, whatever the additional cost, it has to be seen through a different lens. There aren't a lot of other options, and it starts with water from the Colorado River being unreliable. It's completely overallocated, meaning that there is more legal demand on the system than there is physically coming down the river, Hayes said. Leaving desert cities like this with the threat of having to replace 40% of its drinking water. And while costs will go up, it may be difficult to put a value on not having water versus having these resources. Yet, AWP could prove more efficient in the end than an alternative that has been pushed by former Governor Doug Ducey, desalinating water from the Sea of Cortez. Tom Buzacki, director of the Department of Water Resources, had pledged construction costs at about $3 billion, and the cost of delivering water would approach $2,500 an acre-foot, the amount of water that, depending on usage, is needed to serve from 2 to 4 single-family homes. That could make the cost of purified sewage a lot less than a possible $1,200 water bill per house for treated seawater. That was Arizona Publishes Rules for Toilet to Tap Water. Our next article, Council Getting Sneak Preview of Phoenix's Budget Challenges, by Paul Mariniak. Phoenix officials are beginning their months-long preparation of a budget for the fiscal year beginning July 1st with a bit of good news. Total expenditures in the fiscal year that ended June 30th were lower than expected, and revenue was slightly above, giving the city a $16.9 million surplus. But that surplus will be placed into reserves, according to a memo to City Council by City Manager Jeffrey Barton, as Phoenix prepares for some stormy budget waters that actually begin taking shape January 1st. That's when the city can no longer collect a rental tax as a result of the legislature's passage last session of a measure abolishing the levy. The memo was written in advance of a study session City Council was scheduled to hold November 12th, though it will be a few months before Barton and his team present an even deeper look at revenue and expenditure forecasts for the 2025-26 fiscal year. That study session will offer a sneak preview for the council on the big money decisions it will be making in the first half of next year. But it was clear from Barton's memo that the $16 million surplus is dwarfed by the enormous fiscal challenges that will soon be on the doorstep of City Hall. On the revenue side, the rental tax will have a huge impact on the general fund, as well as special additional fund for public safety, an additional money for parks and preserves, and the city's transportation 2050 plan. The total estimated impact for 2024-25 is approximately $35.4 million, and the ongoing annual impact beginning in 2025-26 is over $85 million, Barton said. The estimated cumulative impact to all funds beginning in 2024-25 through 2027-28 is $302 million. The general fund's ending balance for the 2023-24 fiscal year was $293.5 million, although multiple other funding streams for city operations total over $2 billion. The higher-than-anticipated ending fund balance is good news and will be beneficial as we move forward, Barton wrote the council. However, the city continues to face many fiscal challenges described further in this report, which will require strategic and difficult decisions to ensure the budget remains sustainable and balanced. Besides the elimination of the rental tax, Phoenix also faces a number of high-dollar challenges, some of them hard to estimate. On the revenue side, the city faces lower share state income tax money because the legislature lowered the personal income tax rate. Also impacting revenue is a projected $13 million refund of property taxes by the county as a result of a Superior Court ruling that said the county assessor incorrectly valued some properties. Taxing bodies throughout Maricopa County have been affected by the ruling, which will cost municipalities, school districts, and other agencies a total of $333 million in the current fiscal year. On the spending side, there is seemingly no end to the city's fiscal challenges, according to Barton's memo. For example, he said, there's the issue of future raises for city employees. As our city continues to grow, evolve, and face the challenges of a dynamic economic environment and competitive labor market, he wrote, it is imperative we address the need for inflationary adjustments to employee salaries in our budget planning and forecasting. This will be necessary for the city to remain a local market leader. Additionally, inflationary pressures have eroded the purchasing power of wages across various sectors, making it increasingly difficult to attract and retain skilled employees who are critical to maintaining high-quality services. The expiration of any remaining pandemic funding also will deal a $15.3 million impact on the city's efforts to run the affordable housing site for very low-income senior citizens and homeless shelters. While hailed by city leaders as a boon for vital facilities like fire and police stations, parks, and other offerings, the $500 million general obligation bonds approved by voters last year also will be bringing new operational costs to keep them running. While those costs will total an estimated $2.2 million in the coming fiscal year, they will quickly balloon in 3 years to an estimated $25.4 million, the memo said. Perhaps one of the biggest challenges involves the city's unfunded liability for police and firefighters' pensions. Although Barton did not estimate the current total, that debt exceeds $4.5 billion. And in addition to that debt, the city faces continuing escalation in current pension contributions for police and firefighters that will total around $350 million to $400 million annually. Barton also noted that rising health care insurance costs for city employees also figures prominently in the city's fiscal future, although he did not provide an estimate. The city also needs to pick up the costs of salary and benefits for 32 firefighters hired under a 2021 grant that is expiring. And on the public safety front, the looming Department of Justice investigation into Phoenix police practices could pose additional costs on the city, though the future of that probe has been cast in doubt by Donald Trump's election victory because it may well be that his new attorney general won't pursue the investigation. City Council last month approved a laundry list of reform measures that apparently are aimed at mollifying federal investigators and dissuading them from court action aimed at imposing some kind of watchdog to oversee police operations. A majority of the council has indicated it would not agree to a consent decree that would impose oversight by an outside agency. Such consent decrees in other jurisdictions have proven costly. For example, Maricopa County has spent over $300 million under an ongoing consent decree reached in connection with a lawsuit brought against former Sheriff Joe Arpaio's administration. Barton also cited some potential time bombs that he and his aides could not even begin to estimate, including major facility maintenance needs and rising costs to repair and replace vehicles and equipment, increased funding needs for critical IT projects for public safety and criminal justice support, additional resources to adequately fund city trust accounts, including workers' compensation, self-insurance reserve, and long-term disability, challenges estimating revenue collections in the current economic and global climate, demands from residents for additional or new GF services. Then there are new unfunded state or federal mandates, such as new environmental requirements and attempts by the legislature to further reduce taxes. That was Council getting sneak preview of Phoenix's budget challenges. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Did you know that if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org? Then click on the link for broadcast info and audio. Today we are focusing on the news of the past week for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm Bill Carney, continuing on. Light Up Ahwatukee promises the greatest show in the toque by AFN News staff. Like the NFL and 1990-2001 St. Louis Rams owning the phrase, the greatest show on turf, Light Up Ahwatukee likely owns its own phrase, the greatest show in the toque. The nonprofit intends to make its pre-Thanksgiving holiday festival a vibrant celebration of creativity, community, and festive wonder, spokeswoman Morgan Vanderwall said. Given the lineup for the Light Up Ahwatukee Holiday Festival from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. on November 23rd at Desert Foothills Park, who can argue? Calling the fest a great way to kick off the holiday season and get into the Christmas spirit, and a cornerstone for the holiday season in Ahwatukee, Vanderwall said, a plethora of live musical presentations, local food and business purveyors, community performances, holiday-themed activities, and Santa promises to make this year's festival another signature event of the year. Keeping a tradition started by the defunct Festival of Lights Committee, LUA, also has designated a charity partner for the festival. Hope for the Homeless, whose acronym stands for Humbly Offering Positive Encouragement for the Homeless. They shine light in our community by feeding the homeless who are hungry, meeting the homeless in their recovery journey, and loving the homeless for who and where they are, LUA said and designated the Ahwatukee nonprofit. Said Hope for the Homeless founder Tim Berry, we are thrilled to be selected as the partner charity for Light Up Ahwatukee and their holiday festival this year. Their mission to light up all of Ahwatukee through their signature events by helping locally focused charities aligns very much with what we are here to do. Their organization and ours are looking forward to working together in many ways, and we couldn't be more excited about this partnership and the much-anticipated appearance of Santa Claus. Hope for the Homeless will be decorating Santa's village and assisting the big man himself throughout the day by taking complimentary photos with festival guests. Every month, Hope for the Homeless packs 3,000 Hope Bags, bags filled with essentials for life on the streets for a few days. On Saturday, November 23rd, Hope will be collecting new socks on site by Santa's sleigh, as new socks are a crucial necessity for this community. Here are the highlights of the festival. Food and drink. This year, Light Up Ahwatukee has partnered with Ren Sudal, a concept from Arizona-based award-winning Ren House Brewing Company that celebrates traditional European beer styles, culture, and food. Ren Sudale, the Scalp Distribution, will be collaborating as the festival's primary beer sponsor for the event. Ren will have 3 to 4 different beers on tap for purchase with drink tickets. Wine pouring stations will be located in both the 21 and Over Tavern. New for 2024 is an extra wine station and the 21 Plus Lush Winter Cocktail Garden with a variety of wines, bubbly, and seltzers. It's hosted by Lush Cafe and Lounge. Light Up Ahwatukee has just about 20 food trucks and vendors for festival goers to nosh at. New for 2024, Zeke's Pizza will be on site, selling both full-size pizzas and slices. Zeke's also will be providing every volunteer on site a slice of pizza as a thank you meal. As a longtime Ahwatukee resident and business owner, we've always wanted to be a part of this special annual event, said Jody Pechtel, owner of Zeke's. Being asked to be a participant this year is a wonderful privilege and one that we are looking forward to and take great pride in. We can't wait to see and visit with some familiar faces, along with making some new friends along the way, said Pechtel. Other vendors include Hot Bamboo, Cutie's Lemonade, Parlor Donuts, I Dream of Weenies, Chick-fil-A, Food Love featuring a variety of fair items, and Eddie D's featuring nachos, wraps, churros, mac and cheese, turkey legs, and more. Entertainment. LUA has a big lineup for the stage all day from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. One of the things I like best about playing at the Light Up Ahwatukee Holiday Festival is seeing so many familiar faces, said Dennis Lambert for Lil Debbie Band and Contents May Shift. This is by far our most looked forward to event to play at. Playing for our neighbors and such a great community gathering is such a great privilege and a rush. I'm particularly blown away to have students that I once taught as small children come up to me now as adults and say hello to me, added Debbie Lambert, his wife and bandmate. Following a welcome from LUA Board President Maria Reyes-Smith, community organizations will present performances, followed by the Lambert's two bands. The community performers include Dance Connection 2, an award-winning dance studio school in Chandler that has been serving the community for over 35 years, training in ballet, jazz, tap, ballroom, lyrical, hip-hop, and contemporary. Brandon Riggs and My Special World, the selected charity recipient for LUA earlier this year for the April Beer and Wine Gala. He showcases his dance talents to further his nonprofit's mission of making special education students feel welcome in and outside of school. Also performing is AZ Act, the former Ahwatukee Children's Theater, which rebranded to incorporate adults into performances, who sought a local outlet for developing and demonstrating their acting abilities. Also performing is Mariachi Estrella de Cobre, a mariachi youth group created for young musicians. The group was founded in 2022, but most of the members have over 5 years of experience performing throughout the valley. All members of the group are taught traditional music theory in addition to mariachi music theory and work to further develop Spanish as a second language. Also entertaining will be Sunday Night Friends Club, an Ahwatukee band comprising Alyssa Hatula, Vance Monier, and Galeka Zoe Lopez Mora, who bill themselves as a Midwest emo shoegaze rock trio. The Lil Debbie Band has been together for 24 years and played at numerous area events, including nearly every Ahwatukee holiday festival. Wanting to mix up the music variety and the frequency they play out, a few of the members of the Lil Debbie Band performed Contents May Shift after reuniting with longtime guitarist Jill Fortunato. Also notable, along with the Marketplace Street Village featuring local artisans and vendors, the Light Up Ahwatukee Holiday Festival also will offer Candy Cane Lane, where kids can find inflatables and bounce houses from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. An Arizona Humane Society dog adoption will take place from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Admission to the festival is free. That was Light Up Ahwatukee Promises the Greatest Show in the Took. Our next article, Kyrene Students Celebrate Native American Heritage, by AFN News Staff. Native American students in Kyrene School District will reap the rewards of a unique grant partnership. Kyrene is one of the first urban and non-reservation districts to receive a grant from the Navajo Nation Johnson O'Malley Program. The JOM grant provides supplemental funding for cultural enrichment, activities that promote Native American heritage, and academic achievement, initiatives that improve educational outcomes for all Native American students. The goal of the program is to ensure that Kyrene Native American students have access to resources that support their cultural identity as well as academic growth, said Aaron Schrader, Assistant Director of Federal Programs and Outreach. This can include activities that celebrate and preserve indigenous culture and tradition, events that encourage family engagement in their students' education, along with targeted academic support focused on improving reading and math skills. Kyrene is already putting the grant to work, funding its celebration of Native American Heritage Month. The celebration involved 172 students, staff, family members, and guests at Kyrene Del Pueblo Middle School on November 6th. The event honored rich, diverse cultures of North America's indigenous people with live performances and traditional cuisine. "I remember a few events from when I went there," said former Kyrene student Wind River Joaquin, who is now an aunt of two current Kyrene students. "This is the first event I've been to now that my nieces are students, and it's so cool to hear from members of my tribe and other tribes. It's great that my nieces have opportunities like this to come together and learn more about our cultures." The JOM program is a federally funded initiative designed to support educational and extracurricular opportunities for Native American students. Kyrene was awarded JOM funds as a subgrantee of the Navajo Nation. Funds are allocated based on the number of eligible Native American students in a district and specific program needs. "We are so grateful to the Navajo Nation for partnering with us to bring this grant to Kyrene. These funds address the unique needs and support the educational journey of indigenous students. They provide essential resources, honor Native American heritage, and enable Kyrene Native American students to thrive," Schrader said. Kyrene School Districts serves over 1,000 students representing 38 tribal nations. Its boundaries encompass part of the Gila River Indian community. That was Kyrene Students Celebrate Native American Heritage. And finally, from the city of Tempe. Happy Thanksgiving! In observance of Thanksgiving, the city of Tempe will close all administrative offices on Thursday and Friday, November 28th and 29th. Celebrate the holiday season. Find local gift ideas, holiday events, and sustainability tips at tempe.gov/holidays. On Friday, November 29th, join Tempe for a holiday tradition enjoyed by generations, the Fantasy of Lights Street Parade. Bring your family and friends to an event that kicks off the magic of the season with a street parade, tree lighting ceremony, live entertainment, Santa photos, and so much more. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic, coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.